Now it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
The power of story has ruled for centuries, and powerful stories, as we know, can enrich our lives forever. And today's theme, Healing or Harming, Stories of Human Spirit, will be no exception, because this morning's show promises to be a very special one because of my very special guest. Good morning, and welcome to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston Downtown. My guest is Rabbi Dr. Samuel Karf, Rabbi Emeritus of Houston's Congregation Beth Israel, where he served for 24 years as Senior Rabbi. In 1999, because of his tireless commitment to rendering spiritual guidance in contexts that matter most, he became founder and director of the Health and Human Spirit Program at the University of Texas Health Science Center, which, in 2004, was expanded into the Center for Health, Humanities, and the Human Spirit. He was the associate director of what is now the John McGovern Center for Health, Humanities, and the Human Spirit, and visiting professor in the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Texas Medical School here in Houston. A year and a half ago, after 12 years, Rabbi Karf retired from the medical center, although he still teaches the occasional class or delivers that timely lecture. Now he spends time writing a memoir and collaborating with Archbishop Fiorenza and Reverend Lawson on criminal justice issues in our community. Author of Agada, The Language of Jewish Faith, The Soul of Rav, Permissions to Believe, Finding Faith in Troubled Times, and contributor to numerous chapters to so many books. No stranger to radio, many Houstonians will remember the inspiring messages this rabbi conveyed every Sunday morning for many years on CODA. He officiated my son's baby naming and has engaged me for almost 30 years with his words of consummate wisdom. Active, passionate, and caring only begins to describe this person who I admire so deeply and someone I am blessed to call my friend. Good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning, Hank. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it's so wonderful to have you here. You know, I remember so many of your words. I know that when we spoke last year, having lunch, I told you how I remember those wonderful sermons and messianic moments and things that you've said that really made an indelible impression. They eased my heart, which in many ways is the principle behind some of the messages that can heal rather than harm. Tell us, if you would, how do spoken messages nourish the human spirit?
Well, I think if we're honest, all human beings need validation by others. And it's through the messages we receive, the words that are spoken to us at crucial moments by others, hopefully by persons whose opinion we respect, that validate us, or on the contrary, we can speak words that destroy the human spirit.
Yeah.
And weaken it.
It's amazing how powerful that can be. Absolutely. You know, you've got a couple of short stories that you wanted to share with us that helped to illustrate that point.
Yes.
Some
months ago, I was visiting New York City. It was early in the morning, and I needed to stretch my legs, so I decided to walk around the block a few times. As I was rounding the corner closest to our hotel, I saw a man sitting in a wheelchair at the corner. He wasn't selling anything. He wasn't asking for anything. He was drinking coffee and eating a donut that had been brought to him. He was poorly dressed. I didn't know anything about him, but the face fascinated me. The face just radiated goodness, as did his smile as I rounded the corner. The second time I encountered him in my rounding, he called out, "Number two." The third time, "Number three." And the fourth, which turned out to be the last time, "Number four." But for some reason, I couldn't go past him. I approached him. I took my gloves off. I lowered myself so that I would be even with his wheelchair. I extended my hand and said, "I'm Sam." And he responded, "Hi, I'm Jim." And I said, "Jim, I have the sense that you are a very special person." And at that point, He teared up, said, "Thanks. I needed that." That's all that we said, except, "God bless you, Jim." And he said, "God bless you, Sam." And I left.
That's a beautiful story. You know, it's so simple that it's confounding, and it's complex in many ways. One of the things that I love about my job is that every so often I get these thank you notes from students, and all they say are, "Thank you. I never told you that at the time." And they render this validation that I never thought would mean so very much to me, that kind of validation, mm-hmm. that acknowledgement, the recognition that we lack so very much.
Right.
So simple, but so profound. You have another story for us.
I do.
I know you have so many, and I would listen to these all day.
Teaching medical students, in the third year, students actually visit with patients. This third year student was making rounds with a doctor, with a resident, and they walked into the room of, let's call her Mrs. Matthews, and the resident said, "I'm sorry to tell you this, Mrs. Matthew, but you have an abscess, and it needs to be treated." And she responded, "I don't want to treat it. Leave me alone." And he repeated himself, "I hope you understand what I'm saying. If we don't treat this, it could be hazardous to your health, even life-threatening." And she responded, "No, just leave me alone. I want to go home." "Okay, if that's the way you feel. But if you change your mind, let us know." And the doctor left, and the third-year student followed. Now, the doctor had a lot more things to do. The third-year student had a little time. Somehow, he was pulled back into Mrs. Matthews' room. He asked her permission to sit by her bed, which she granted. He held her hand, and he said, "Tell me, Mrs. Matthews, why won't you let us treat you?" And he obviously asked that question in a way that showed he cared and wanted an answer. And she started sobbing uncontrollably and said, "I've been HIV positive for 10 years. I don't deserve to be treated." And he responded, "Mrs. Matthews, you deserve to be treated as much as I do. And you owe it to yourself and your family to be treated. Please let us treat you." And she agreed to be treated.
Wonderful. That is so wonderful. We rarely, well, I shouldn't say rarely, but in the olden days, however we define that, physicians knew that good communication enhanced the healing process. It's not so much that it extends life, but it enhances healing.
Absolutely.
It takes moments that we have, and it makes them more treasurable. They make them more cherished. You are listening to Healing or Harming, Stories of Human Spirit on KPFT's Storytime with my guest, Rabbi Samuel Karf, and I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek. Rabbi, if it's comfortable for you, can you tell us, did anything happen in your life, something that ignited this passion for thinking more carefully about words that encourage, endorse, and embrace?
Well, that's not difficult, Hank. I grew up in a home where my parents expressed great love and great validation for my sister and for me, but they had great difficulty in validating each other. Mm. In a different age, they might well have separated and been divorced. Or on the other hand, one could say they were codependents. But my mother particularly, by her cutting speech, could devastate my father, belittle him. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with this, the contrast between their validating us by words and their invalidating each other. And I think that ignited in me a sense that I wanted to use whatever gifts I had to nourish with the words I speak rather than hurt.
Yeah, the notion of verbal abuse has always been underestimated in my judgment. The kinds of things that we offer, the abrupt words, the kind of configuration that can be biting and devastating, the verbal and nonverbal that contradict each other. I love you very much, well, you don't sound like I do. The inability to talk, the inability to listen actively. It's very prevalent. It's very, very prevalent, and I know that I deal with that all the time when I deal with students and I do consulting and I talk with them about the power of words, and sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't, but it's so worth contemplating, and it's something that we just haven't really fine-tuned yet. I'm not sure we ever will. You know, you have used the concept, one of my favorite terms, messianic moments, to describe moments of kindness, times when protecting human dignity was paramount. And, you know, Oprah talks about spontaneous moments of kindness, gestures. Define for us, please, Rabbi, what exactly do you mean when you talk about a messianic moment?
Well, I regard it as those moments when we find ourselves on the receiving end or on the giving end of a kind of kindness and love and empathy we didn't expect. They're moments when we seem to be living in the messianic age rather than in this unredeemed world. And so we kind of show in that moment the best that a human being is capable of. Mm-hmm. Saints can sustain it. Most of us cannot live on that level constantly, and that makes the messianic moments all the more precious.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful point. You know, the notion is that, in my mind at least, what I have learned from you is that our ability to maintain the dignity of other people is something that is incredibly difficult, and I'm not sure why, really. It takes some thought, it takes some conscientiousness. I always think about the film Schindler's List, and I think about the actor Ralph Fiennes, who's playing this commandant at a Nazi concentration camp, but he's killing people at random. And of course, he's confronted by Oscar Schindler, who asks, why is it that you are killing all of these people at random? Says, because it gives me a sense of power. To which Schindler replies, let me tell you what real power is. It's when you know you can kill someone and choose not to. And that made an impression on me. And in many ways, I find that congruent with the messianic moments, the narratives that you share so often, because the idea of us having the power to be biting, the idea of being offering clipped speech and offering the kind of devastating terms and feelings that really reduce a person to virtually nothing. And we're responsible for that. We are responsible for that. The idea of just taking a few words and a smile, as I tell my students, a smile is only a curve. You know, that's all it is. It doesn't take very long. And to do that is marvelously energizing. But messianic moments, you've done a lot of sermons with messianic moments. Do you ever use that term when you talk to medical students?
Actually, I can't remember if I have or not, but it's certainly very much a part of my consciousness and very much a part of my life.
This program is all about, in my judgments, the kind of treasures that are found in human stories. And when we share stories about human spirit, especially to healthcare professionals, it is a marvelous sort of a thing that we do. Do you find medical students using stories, using personal narratives in their own treatment of their patients?
Well, I encourage them to. Mm-hmm. If they've gone through some difficult experiences and they are speaking to a patient who has or is about to go through a difficult experience, if they can speak of their own experience rather than be up there, it equalizes, and it encourages persons to hope, well, you know, he got through it, maybe I can too.
Right, and that's a wonderful point. It's a common denominator, and we don't want to confuse that from being to being, you know, totally empathetic. We don't know exactly how another person feels, but we want to be able to find some common denominators, and narratives do that. These stories, these episodes, these specks in time, which are frozen in time and are ready to thaw, if you will. Right. And I think that when physicians do that comfortably and carefully, they're doing an awful lot to nurture their own practice of medicine. It has to be encouraged, absolutely. You are enjoying, I know you're enjoying, Healing or Harming, Stories of Human Spirit on Storytime on KPFT Houston 90.1. I'm Dr. Hank Rubichek with my special guest, Rabbi Samuel Karf, Rabbi Emeritus of Congregation Beth Israel. Rabbi, let's explore the notion of healing and harming with a story or a couple of short stories that represent this wonderful concept of messianic moments.
Sure. Let me start with a biblical one. Jacob and Esau were twins when Esau was the older one, and so he was entitled to the birthright, the power to lead the tribe when the father died. When Esau realized that Jacob had gotten him to sell the birthright very, very cheaply for a bowl of lentils that Jacob was cooking when Esau came back ravenously hungry from a hunt, he was furious and was determined to kill his brother. Jacob flees his brother and they don't see each other for 20 years. Then one day, the scout in Jacob's encampment looks out and he says, "You know, I see someone who looks awfully like your brother Esau, and he's coming toward us with 400 armed men." Jacob is just terrified. He feels the moment that he dreaded has come. His brother is going to revenge. His brother is going to kill him. He sends gifts ahead to try to pacify his brother, but his brother keeps coming forward toward the camp, close enough at one point to kill him. Much to Jacob's astonishment and relief, Esau extends his hands not to kill Jacob, but to hug him, and the two brothers weep. What a scene. Instead of revenge, that messianic moment was a moment of forgiveness. But just to show you that it's a messianic moment and not the messianic age, although there was forgiveness, the brothers don't live together. They separate and don't meet again until their father's funeral. That's one story. Another one is the experience that I've had in a surgical waiting room from time to time. You know, people come in there from all walks of life. Some come with a broken down pickup, and others in a shiny new Lexus. Some are rich and some are poor. Some are white and some are black. Some are Jewish and some are Muslim or Catholic. And all these roles and structures divide us. They might sit in that room and not even talk to each other. But if they are sitting there, they sense eventually that they are all united by common anxiety about a loved one and common hope about the outcome of that surgery. And as they're waiting, strangers become instant friends. They address each other by first names. They hug each other. They pray with each other and for each other. They ask each other to tell your story, and they listen. And then at the end of the day, when the surgical waiting room empties out, they all go back to their separate lives, probably never to see each other again. But during that day, they were living in messianic time.
Yeah. That's a wonderful, wonderful delineation between the time and the moment. You know, one of the assignments that I give in to my students in a storytelling class is a personal narrative, and I give them a little bit of instruction. But I had this one student this semester, and this happens almost every semester, who says to me, "Dr. Rubicek, I can't do this. I don't have any stories." I said, "Really? Come talk with me in my office, share some ideas with me." And he sits in my office and he looks at me and he says, "You know, let me tell you why I don't have any stories. I don't have any stories because when I was young, I didn't get along with my father. And I decided to go into the Marine Corps, and when I did, I was upset because I hadn't seen my father for about 15 years. And I was about 19 years old. After basic training, I really wished that he were there. And I was angry with him. And then, as my name was called, I saw this man who looked like my father. And it was. I ran up to him, and then when I was about 2 feet away, I said, "Oh no, oh no, 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 oh no, this man, I will not forgive him." And he turned, because at the moment his back was to me, he turned, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I couldn't help but cry, so I grabbed him, and I hugged him. And I looked at my student, and I said, "You don't have a story? Are you kidding me? That is one of the best stories I've ever heard. I said, no, it's not a story, it's just my life. I said, that's the best kind. And I thought to myself, I didn't use the words, but that had to be a messianic moment.
Mm.
That had to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that had to be a messianic moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. For those of you who are listening and you love stories, and I know that so many of you do, that's why you are such wonderful fans of this show. And I'm the proud president of the Houston Storytellers Guild. And for anyone who wants to nurture skills in storytelling or just listen to some of the wild to endearing tales told by our members, I want you to come to our monthly story swaps held the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 at St. Andrew's House at Heights Boulevard on 18th. And check out our site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for a calendar of some pretty wonderful events like the upcoming Liars Contest, for those of you who can't handle the truth, on April 13th. It's a lot of fun, and my friends, make sure that you come and read all about it on our site. You are listening to Healing and Harming on KPFT Storytime with Rabbi Samuel Karf. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek. Rabbi, many people seem to be better equipped to punish rather than praise nowadays, to be rough instead of tender. And I suppose some people see obstacles, maybe psychological, environmental, whatever, obstacles to their own ability to render these kind and compassionate words. In your mind, are there any obstacles that they do feel are in front of them? I know that's a hard question, and if so, how do we get rid of these obstacles? What kind of advice might you offer?
Well, I think that that's one of the purposes of prayer, where we ask for help to be the better person that we want to be, realizing that we're not always that person. I know that in my daily prayers, I pray that I will feel more deeply the joy and the pain of others. And I also pray that I'll feel more deeply my own joy and pain. So prayer can, in many persons' lives, be a way of helping us attain, at least more frequently, that standard that in our better moments we would like to attain. Another thing is that there's a brokenness in our lives, and the more we are hurting, and the more we're not coming to grips with what is the source of the hurt and how we can alleviate it, needing help from others often, not doing it ourselves. Even if we ourselves are healers of others, we can't heal ourselves. We need the help of others to help us become more at peace with ourselves. And the more we can affirm ourselves and love ourselves, the easier it will be to respond empathetically to the pain of others.
That's a wonderful point. Stories work, don't they? I mean, telling stories to each other,
absolutely,
I think, work wonderful. I know that doesn't sound like a very profound point, but, you know, sometimes we talk at people rather than with them. We seem to inform people rather than share information. And ultimately, when we do that, we don't really get people involved or as engaged. Instead, we get them isolated, mm-hmm, or alienated at times. And you feel joy in your life, right?
I do.
But if you had to think of one word, two words that would identify the greatest joy in your life, what would that be?
Well, it's the experience of knowing that I am loved, and knowing the love that I feel for another.
That's beautiful. And you are. You are. Stories convey magical moments, and some are powerful enough to heal. Thank you, Rabbi Samuel Karf, for being my guest and for sharing your wisdom, your stories, and your spirit on Storytime. I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, wishing all of you a safe and very restful weekend and a lifetime of nourishing sentiments. We'll see you next month, and remember, everyone, that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Take care.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. We rely on listener donations. Visit KPFT.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an open journal. Prospective producers must fill out an open journal request form, which is available at our website with details. The program director welcomes your feedback on every open journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what open journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Please stay tuned for Wide Open Spaces coming up at 10, and thank you for tuning in to today's Open Journal here on 90.1 KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.